Next case for argument is Jacoby versus Barnard, Ms. Guerra.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Ava Guerra on behalf of Donald Jacoby. This is a Social Security case in which the claimant has been denied benefits. And the main issue, well, first of all, in Social Security, there's a five-step sequential evaluation. And in this case, as the magistrate judge's report and recommendation states, the linchpin of this case is whether Mr. Jacoby could do sedentary or light work. Plaintiff asserts, of course, that sedentary is the greatest limit or the greatest functional capability he has for work. And this is based on the fact that his orthopedic surgeon, who has followed him for more than 7 years to the date of this decision, even returned him to work to favored work that was less than sedentary, and he could not even perform that. Dr. Dorr, who is a specialist, as we indicated, opined to the court in a questionnaire that the claimant could do walking of less than 1 hour in an 8-hour day consistently. The ALJ here chose to substitute the treating physician's opinion for that of his own, and citing only a non-examining physician in the record from Disability Determination Service who didn't examine or treat the claimant. And basically, the ALJ ignored the findings of the treating physician. And as we cite in our brief, Clifford versus Apfel requires the ALJ to consider all of the signs and findings of the treating physician. And in making his decision, he has to show a logical bridge to the conclusion he draws. In this case, he did not do that.
Ms. Guerra, forgive me, but what in the record will tell us about Mr. Jacoby's level of pain? The commissioner seems to rely on the fact that he didn't take anything more than aspirin.
Well, he actually took naps.
Did he decline to take stronger drugs for some reason?
Well, he actually did take Naprosyn and Relafen.
But those are not for pain per se, are they?
They're anti-inflammatory.
Right.
And he did have injections into his knees of cortisone to relieve the pain. And for all purposes, we're not alleging. The doctor does say basically he's capable of even less than sedentary work. But if Mr. Jacoby were found to be able to do sedentary work, he would fall under the medical vocational grids at 201.14, and he should be found disabled. So my point in this is that he could work sedentary, but that would still make him disabled. So he doesn't have to be in such a condition that he would be incapable of all work. And that is about the only thing the ALJ was able to cite, is the fact that he didn't take pain medication. Mm-hmm. What he failed to cite are all of the objective findings, which included swelling and stiffness and inability to remain on his feet for an 8-hour day. He has to elevate his leg for above his waist level at least 2 hours out of an 8-hour day. The ALJ also didn't consider the fact that the long-term treating physician said he would have problems with his concentration due to the pain level he had, and didn't factor that into his conclusion. There was no vocational expert present to assist the ALJ in assessing how the non-exertional impairments would actually affect the claimant's ability to do work. There was a vocational report in the record by Dr. Samuel Goldstein, which is not even mentioned in the decision. Now, I would agree that Dr. Goldstein also was a non-examining, non-treating vocational expert. However, if the ALJ is going to cite one non-examining physician, he should have at least cited the other person also. And so if he gave weight to his non-examining physician, he should have at least analyzed the report by Dr. Goldstein, who is an expert in vocational matters. There was one consulting examiner who also examined Mr. Jacoby, And his conclusions basically were just a recitation of Mr. Jacoby's history, and he also noted findings that were positive. He did not make an assessment of residual functional capacity, and so the ALJ had no one else to look to except the orthopedic surgeon, and he really did not give an analysis as to why he refused to or ignored those opinions. This court in Gudgell versus Barnhart noted that for the ALJ to rely just on the contradictory opinion and of a non-examining physician was error, and it wasn't sufficient evidence to ignore or overrule the opinions of the treating physicians. In this case, we, as Ann Clifford stated, that this ALJ played doctor and substituted his own opinion as opposed to taking what was in the record. Mr. Jacoby had three surgeries on his knees. Two of them were done by Dr. Dorr, who treated him, as I stated, for 7 years. There is Dr. Dorr's opinion. One of the other things, I'm sorry, that the ALJ found fault with or frowned upon was the fact that Dr. Dorr answered in a checkbox questionnaire. And we would assert that Dr. Dorr did not just do a checkbox questionnaire. Basically, he framed his answers based on his 7 years of treating and observing his patient and having done several surgical procedures and injections in his knee. And so his opinions are not just a one-time checkbox. He should have looked at the complete record and didn't. And Mr. Jacoby is currently 55, and at 55, doing light work would even grade him out under the vocational rules. At the time of the hearing, he was 51, and as we stated, if he was capable of sedentary work, he should have been found disabled. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Guerra. Mr. Nagel?
If it pleases the court, Patrick Nagel, on behalf of the Joanne B. Barnhart, Commissioner of Social Security, and the appellee in this matter. A review of the evidence in this case proves consistent with the ALJ's finding that the appellant could perform light work activity. The appellant injured his left knee in April of 1998. He underwent arthroscopic surgery in May of 1998, and he pursued follow-up treatment through August of 1998. He then filed his application for disability benefits at the end of August. At this time, appellant abandoned any efforts to seek further medical treatment for his alleged knee pain. Appellant has argued several times during the course of her oral argument that Dr. Dorr treated the appellant throughout the date of the decision, and that's false. Dr. Dorr last treated the appellant prior to the appellant even applying for disability benefits in August of 1998. That was the last time that he examined the appellant in this case, and his opinion only shows and provides a glimpse of what the appellant's condition was at that time.
Now, we have two physicians who are recommending total knee replacement. One recommending he wait until he can no longer walk even two blocks. That seems to indicate a painful degenerative condition. What reason would we have to doubt that this condition is very painful?
Well, Your Honor, both of those opinions were rendered prior to the application for disability benefits, and both of those opinions said that if his condition were to worsen to the point where he would need a total knee reconstruction, they didn't suggest that he definitely needed one. In fact, they said if he were to be limited to walking less than two blocks at a time, at that time he should consider one. However, the commissioner argues that the appellant's condition never reached that level. And as evidence of that, we'd like to show, first, that the appellant forewent the opportunity to seek any other treatment for this crippling knee pain that he supposedly had that caused concentration limitations, that forced him to lift his leg for 5 hours a day at waist level. He acknowledged that the only medication he took for this condition was one or two aspirin a day. He also...
Well, do you want to turn him into Rush Limbaugh? I really don't understand that argument.
Well, Your Honor, I think even more importantly, he did seek treatment on no less than 10 separate occasions during the relevant period, for other ailments. And he had ear pain, abdominal pain, shoulder pain, minor ailments that resolved quickly. But during none of those 10 other visits to other doctors did he even mention his alleged knee pain. The crippling knee pain that forced him to be disabled wasn't mentioned, nor did either of the doctors, Dr. Compton or Dr. Dawes, even notice a limp. Their treatment notes have no limitations on walking or on standing. The appellant was often offered the opportunity to set forth his complaints, and he did. He would list 5 or 6 problems that he was having. Never once did he even mention his knee. And those reports occurred in November and December of 1998. They occurred in March, April.
But those doctors were not orthopods, were they?
No, they weren't, Your Honor. Although...
I mean, like, if I go to see my eye doctor, I don't mention my knee pain.
Well, he did have a rotator cuff injury, and he received treatment for that from a doctor. And the doctor said, you know, do you have any other complaints? Is anything else bothering you? You know, Dr. Compton, Dr. Doss noted that the appellant appeared in no acute distress, despite his alleged level of pain throughout the examination. And Dr. Compton noted that the appellant admitted that he walked daily for exercise, which I think is in stark contrast to his own allegation. In fact, if you look at the period under consideration, which would be from August of 1998 through the date of the ALJ's decision, the only time that appellant ever alleged any knee pain to anybody was when he went to the Social Security consultative examiner. And then all of a sudden, at that point, he could only walk 2 blocks at a time. He couldn't even bend his knee. He alleged these types of complaints, which were not consistent with any of the pain. He described constant and throbbing pain to the consultative examiner, but when asked by other doctors, he had no pain, he had no other problems, and if he had this kind of constant pain, why wouldn't he have mentioned it? Why wouldn't he have noticed it? Why would he walk daily for exercise if it was in such bad pain?
Well, something that sort of bothered me was the fact that the ALJ relied on what he called inconsistencies in the treating doctor's notes in order to, you know, discount the treating doctor's opinion. But I didn't see inconsistencies. He failed to mention certain things in the record, the elevation of the leg or the effect of pain on work. But then when he's asked to clarify, he confirms that he did tell him to elevate the leg and does believe the pain would interfere with his work. So it's not as if he says two different things. He's merely filling in the gaps. In other words, where are the inconsistencies? Not the filling in the gaps, but the inconsistencies.
The October of 1999 functional assessment that you're referring to was an assessment. It was a checkbox form prepared by the plaintiff's attorney that the doctor checked boxes on. He, at that time, had not even examined the appellant in over a year. On that same form that he claims that, you know, the appellant had to lift his leg at knee level or at waist level and that he had these concentration problems, things that he had never mentioned in any of his treatment notes and no other doctor had mentioned, he also said that he checked a box that affirmed that this pain and this level of functioning had remained constant throughout the entire period. Well, he was in no position to do that, obviously, because he hadn't even seen the guy in 14 months. So, you know, for him to check these boxes, I think what the ALJ was getting at, and I think a reasonable person could find that, the doctor was looking with a sympathetic eye towards the appellant when he was checking the boxes on this form, because, for instance, that box is patently false. We know that. The other boxes that allege these other concentration limitations are actually the opposite of his treatment notes, which said that the guy had no mental limitations, there was no impact of pain on his ability to function.
I'm sorry, I missed something you said.
I'm sorry.
What box was it?
It was a box on the form that said that he checked a box that asserted that the severity of the appellant's symptoms and limitations had remained constant since August of 1998. Now, he was then, of course, had no basis for this conclusion other than to sympathetically, you know, try to fill out a form to help his appellant because he hadn't seen the appellant in 14 months. He had no idea if this had been a constant problem because he had no basis for that. In fact, you know, the form itself, as the ALJ pointed out, not only contrasted with drastically all the other record evidence, but, you know, was not supported by Dr. Doerr's own treatment notes. He did not attach a narrative assessment or any explanation to the form to describe why all of a sudden these other limitations existed. And in fact, both Dr. Compton and Dr. Doss, the two doctors who did examine the appellant on numerous occasions throughout the period at issue, both of those doctors examined him. Neither one of them mentioned any debilitating pain that would cause mental limitations or limitations on functioning, and neither one of them noted any limitations on the need to lift a leg at waist level. I mean, these are relatively drastic limitations, and yet when the appellant is visiting other doctors, it's not even a problem, it's not even noticeable. And I think the ALJ found that compelling. Also, I'd like to say that the one time that he did have his knee specifically examined for the sake of this disability application during the relevant period by Dr. Wentz, the consultative examiner, the examiner noted that x-ray results, he compared the x-ray results from 1995, from a period when the appellant was actually performing arduous work where he was lifting 100 pounds at a time, 50 pounds frequently, constantly walking and standing, continuously bending and kneeling, I mean really heavy work. He compared those x-rays with the x-rays from April of 1998, contemporary x-rays, and found that the osteoarthritis, the changes in between the x-rays, were very limited. I mean, basically, the knee hadn't changed during that period of time. He also noted that extension and flexion were either full or very good, despite the appellant's allegations at that very time that he couldn't even bend his knee. And he also noted that the appellant's condition, while he alleged was disabling, didn't appear to be, because the other evidence of, let's see, it's during that examination, I'm sorry, the appellant was suggesting that he couldn't walk even two blocks at a time. 3 weeks before that very examination, he tells Dr. Compton that he walks for exercise daily. So I think that the ALJ can look at this and realize that apart from the one examination when the appellant was tailoring his responses to his application for disability benefits.
He didn't say how far he was walking when he said
He just said he was walking daily for exercise. But he mentioned no limitations on that. He didn't mention any pain or any, you know, inability to walk due to knee pain. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nagel. Ms. Square, how much time does she have? 3 minutes?
First, with regard to the additional doctors that the claimant saw, when he went to see Dr. Doss, he had a rotator cuff tear for which he also had surgery. And as Your Honor pointed out, when one goes to one specialist, one does not always mention cardiac problems to a shoulder doctor or a knee problem to a shoulder doctor. And so if Mr. Jacoby was dealing with severe problems with his shoulder, he was following a doctor for that pain while he was still dealing with whatever he had in the lower extremities. Dr. Doerr specifically said on his last examination or a letter to the employer that Mr. Jacoby had reached maximum medical functioning. And so one could extrapolate from that his condition would be that way. Basically, his diagnosis is osteoarthritis and degenerative joint disease, neither of which is expected to improve. So when Dr. Doerr completed the questionnaire based on his prior treatment, he basically understood that the claimant was stable from the point of view that he had left him at, which is no extensive walking and lifting his leg above waist level on a regular basis to avoid swelling.
Pretty irresponsible, though, to certify a condition is unchanged when you haven't seen the person.
Well, basically, Brother Counsel actually said the wrong words in terms of what is in the questionnaire. He did not say that Mr. Doerr's condition was constant.
Well, it's close enough.
It existed, I mean, at the same or similar degree.
Have the patient's symptoms and limitations existed at the same or similar degree
right.
of severity since August 26, 1998? And this is October 27, 1999. So how would he know that they were the same or similar degree of severity?
Your Honor, at that point, that was submitted after the hearing, and he may have actually examined the claimant at that time before completing that. So I don't have that information in front of me, but that did not occur prior to the hearing. That was October 27th, and the hearing was October 14th. So there may have been additional treatment notes that were not submitted in the record.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brewer. Time has expired. Thank you. That's okay.